patient when unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Oh, they're coming.
This is the University of Brighton on Friday, June the 2nd, 2017. We're at a debate about the general election, Brighton Pavilion candidates.
Who's the director of the Institute for Development Studies, who will be doing this in partnership with, as well as with the University Student Union. Welcome everybody to our Hustings event for Brighton Pavilion. We had our Hustings for Brighton Kemp Town a couple of weeks ago. What we're trying to do is we're trying to make sure that we can give as much exposure to the candidates standing in the general election, which is now frighteningly close, as we can in the run-up to the 9th of June. Or 8th of June, I can't remember. I should say, I have a postal vote and I have already voted, so it's irrelevant. I haven't got a huge amount to say. First, I hope you notice that I'm wearing a shirt that's got red, blue, green stripes on it, which make it purple as well, so I have absolute neutrality in this. And I say that partly because I know that there are lots of people with very strong views and quite a few wearing your views on your chest, so to speak. Can I ask you to treat each candidate with respect? We're very pleased that everybody has come and very grateful for you to come and exposing yourself to questions. Can we make sure that the questions are challenging but always in the spirit of friendliness. There are five candidates standing for Brighton Pavilion. These are Ian Burdon from Burdon Buchanan from UKIP, Solomon Curtis from Labour, Caroline Lucas, who's Green, Emma Warman, who's Conservative, and Nick Yeomans, who's standing as an independent candidate. Just a bit of very boring housekeeping. If the fire alarm goes off, then it means that we have a fire. So there are exits here and up there, so please leave carefully and quickly. If you want to tweet, please use the hashtag Sussex Hustings. I have nothing else to say. I'm going to come and sit in the back, but I'd like to hand over to Melissa Leach, as I said, director of IDS.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you for being here on a warm, sunny afternoon for, I think, a really important and valuable event with just a week to go until the election. So I'm director of IDS, and we're delighted to be organising this in collaboration with the University of Sussex. And I'm also pleased that we've been able to organise colour-coded chairs for our candidates today. I'm here in a bluey-green one, in a red dress, and red and blue make purple, so I'm like Adam, well mixed up and unpartisan in what I hope will be a balanced but engaged debate this afternoon. So I'm going to start by introducing our panellists. So in order from left to right, which is also alphabetical order by first name, we have Caroline Lucas. I'm sure you all know, who worked in the Communication Office for Oxfam prior to becoming a member of the European Parliament in 1999. Caroline is co-leader of the Green Party and she's the Green Party candidate for Brighton Pavilion. She was first elected to represent the constituency in Parliament in 2010. We then have on my left Nigel Furness, who stood as the UKIP candidate for Hove Central in the local elections in 2015. He's a retired physiotherapist and he's the spokesperson for UKIP in Brighton and Hove. Nigel's representing the UKIP candidate today for Brighton Pavilion, who is Ian Burdon Buchanan. And then on my right, we have Solomon Curtis, who stood as the Labour Party candidate for Wealden in the 2015 general election. He's an undergraduate student here at Sussex, reading politics, although, as he pointed out, he actually just finished yesterday. And he's a member of the Youth Parliament and a former vice chair of the British Youth Council. Solomon is currently the Labour Party candidate for the We did invite the Conservative Party candidate for Brighton Pavilion, Emma Warnham. The Conservative Association had agreed to provide a representative for the hustings that were to be held last week, which obviously had to be cancelled because of the crisis in Manchester. And unfortunately, both the candidate and her rep weren't able to join us today. I'm sorry about that. But we do have a great lineup, who I'm sure will bring us a diversity of very different perspectives on the issues before us. So what we're going to do, I'm about to give each panellist 2 minutes, strictly timed, for an opening statement. In an order which follows an independent draw that we just had just now, the panellists are aware that this is timed, so we will hold them to their 2 minutes. Then we're going to have a series of questions from people already primed, so we know what those questions are. We're going to allow each candidate to give a response and make sure they stick to the question. So we'll have 3 of those, then we will have an opportunity for some open Q&A from the floor, and then each candidate, again in a drawn order, will have a closing statement and we'll finish promptly just before 6. So without further ado, the first 2 minutes opening statement goes to Nigel Furness from UKIP.
Afternoon everybody. In my opening speech I'd just like to say that I just have to say that UKIP are the only truly anti-establishment party standing on this platform here today. The Tories, I think, frankly, have made a habit. I've appeared out about a dozen things in this city. The Tories have turned up only twice. I think that, frankly, is an insult to democracy. They seem to think that they're just going to walk on water. I think something very different is going to happen, but enough of that. Why I say we're an anti-establishment party is because we are not part and parcel of the favoured few, no disrespect to either candidate either side of me. Publicity is withheld from us on very many things. We're not a one-trick pony. We achieved Brexit for this country. But there are a whole host of other policies we have. I'm not going to waffle on, I haven't got the time. One of them is restoring the student grant for things vital to this country. Things such as engineering, science, technology, medicine. No pay for that. Bursaries for nurses, bursaries for doctors. Instead of robbing the rest of the world of their talented people, we have so much talent in this city, and it's a tragedy to say, no disrespect to flipping burgers and pulling points. We need to get proper, well-paid jobs in this city. We need to sort out the high housing crisis. And by the way, we would like to go back to the days when Clement Attlee brought in care from cradle to the grave. Thank you.
Well, hello Sussex, and thanks for having us here. And I'm proud to be your Labour candidate for Brighton Pavilion, but possibly even prouder to have studied here for the last 3 years. And thanks, Adam, for the introduction and all the work that Sussex University does, because this university has been the home of many struggles that we've faced over our time, whether that's going and supporting Nelson Mandela in the 1960s, or whether it's standing up against the sort of high rents that people are having to face in Brighton. Now, we're running a positive campaign here. We're running a campaign under my leader, Jeremy Corbyn, to change our country in a way that we've never seen before. And why is it important that we're going to vote here in Pavilion? Because we were told in 2015 that people were voting Green because they didn't feel they could vote Labour. They didn't feel that we were radical enough. They wanted us to be anti-austerity. They wanted us to be different from the Tories. And that's what we've done. We've held our end of the bargain. And if the goal is to be believed, then this could be a hung parliament. So every seat is going to make the difference. Every seat can make the difference as to whether Jeremy Corbyn is Prime Minister or whether Theresa May is Prime Minister. And I know which one I'd prefer. And that's because the Queen will ring the party leader who has the most seats. It doesn't matter if there are a couple of Green seats or a couple of UKIP seats. It's however many seats you have, whoever has the most seats. And I think that Brighton, the home of progressive politics, has been calling for us to deal with the housing crisis, to put forward anti-austerity policies, to end tuition fees. And now is the time for Brighton to stand with a Labour Party that can change our country, as I said, in a way that we never have before. Because what I'm worried about is that if we don't win seats like Brighton Pavilion, then it sends a signal to the Labour Party that moving to the left hasn't won seats. So if that's the party you wanted, if you want our leader Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister, here we are. We'd love your vote. Thanks very much.
Come and talk to you this afternoon. Huge thanks as well to Sussex students who again and again have voted Green. You were instrumental, many of you, in getting me first elected in 2010, then again in 2015, and I hope very much you'll keep up that tradition of pioneering in the rest of the country in 2017 as well. I am passionate about Brighton. I am hugely honoured to represent such an amazing city. It's a city that has lots of problems, and we'll get to talk about those, I'm sure, issues around mental health, around drugs, around homelessness, but you'll also know that it is a city with a special heart and a special spirit as well. In terms of my journey to politics, I've been very involved in the campaign against nuclear weapons. I first got involved in politics through CND. I'm passionately against renewing Trident, and I'm very sorry that Labour has gone back on that pledge now. I'm passionate about feminism. I've spoken here about feminism. I've been in Parliament wearing my No More Page 3 t-shirt and was threatened with being thrown out of Parliament as a result of wearing said t-shirt. I helped set up something called Brighton Women's Voices, which again is an umbrella group stretching everything from rape crisis centres through to the Girl Guides around women's empowerment and information in this city. I'm passionate about climate change, and as you can imagine, today is not a happy day after the announcement from President Trump. But I want to tell you why it's so important to keep that green voice in Parliament. Because the only reason Labour is moving leftwards is because it's got Greens breathing down its neck. Now, if Jeremy stays there, that's great, and we can keep pushing him, try and push the rest of his party too, so they do follow him on issues like nuclear weapons, because it's a real shame that the manifesto of the Labour Party is one that would see us renewing our nuclear weapons. The manifesto of the Labour Party is one that would see us locked into nuclear power. The manifesto of the Labour Party is one that sees us not having electoral reform. There's a long way to go. That's why you need the Greens there, both to hold Labour to account, to hold their feet to the fire, and the Tories as well.
Okay, so we've heard three quite different opening statements. And now we move to questions. So the first question for the panel comes from Jamie Gillespie. Jamie, are you there?
Have you
got Ross? So,
can
you get a microphone to Jamie?
Hi, hello to the panel. Thanks for coming. Caroline, Nigel, Sonia. I'm a Conservative Council candidate for South Wolf Lane, so I just thought I'd make you aware of that. As someone who works with the homeless in Brighton and Hove City on a regular basis, what can the panel suggest, please, to resolve the desperate housing crisis we now have in our city?
Okay, so perhaps we'll go in reverse order. Caroline, what would you like to say about this one?
Well, thank you very much for the question, because I think you're absolutely right. The housing crisis is easily the biggest issue in the city. It's the thing that fills my post bag most often. And one of the things I think we should be doing is introducing rent caps. In other words, in the private sector, people's rents are spiralling so high that there's no way that they can even pay those, let alone saving up for any kind of deposit. We want to have a living rent commission, which would basically be a body that would work out what would be a living rent, what is a reasonable rent given the cost of living in a certain place. And obviously the cost of living in a place like Brighton is massively higher than a place like Baltimore or Birmingham. So we want to see that. We want to see a register of landlords so we can make sure that the quality of the housing in the city is much better as well. And temporary accommodation, emergency accommodation in the city, it's absolutely appalling. What makes it even worse is that the owner of some of that emergency accommodation is a multimillionaire who doesn't seem to care one jot about the kind of status of the accommodation that's being provided. We need to see more homeless shelters, and I'm proud that the Greens have put a motion to the local council to achieve that. But ultimately, we need to put change at a national level. I would like to see us, for example, change the local housing allowance. The local housing allowance right now is pegged to the average area cost of housing. But because Brighton is sandwiched in between New Haven on one end and Shoreham at the other that have cheaper housing, in a sense that works against us when it estimates how much our local housing allowance should be. So that needs to change. At the moment, out of 410 properties
on the kind of the website for people to try and bid for, only 14 of those actually fall within the housing allowance rate. We want to see changes as well when it comes to affordability, when it comes to changing the issue of 21-year-olds not being able to access, people below the age of 21 not being able to access housing benefit. We need to change that too. So long story short, we need much more affordable housing, and the Greens are committed to at least 500,000 social homes over the next period of this Parliament. We want to stop flogging off social homes. How can it make sense to be building more social homes, but yet still going on with, you know, the right to buy and flogging off social homes? We want to see rent controls, we want to see more controls in the private rented sector, and we want to see much better emergency accommodation and homeless accommodation too.
Would Labour take the same kind of line, or are there additional or different things that you might want to do?
Well, we wouldn't take a similar line, because I think that housing is definitely the single biggest issue that people in Brighton are facing, and every party here is going to agree on that. The difference is that it's going to be a Labour government or a Tory government, so the only people that can actually make a difference on homelessness, the only people who can actually build a million homes, like Jeremy Corbyn said he's going to do, the only people who can actually introduce rent caps like Jeremy Corbyn said he's going to do, the only people who can actually take on the landlords like Jeremy Corbyn said he's going to do, is going to be the Labour Party or the Tory Party. And that is the real choice at this general election. And look, homelessness has increased rapidly over the last 7 years in Brighton. We see it as a single problem. I grew up locally, and even, you know, myself don't see myself owning my own home in Brighton, because the cost of living and the cost of housing is so expensive. I mean, even East Slope is pretty expensive if you compare it for what it actually is in terms of accommodation. So what I think we need to do is, quite simply, we need to build homes. We need to build them on brownfield sites. We need to convert homes that aren't being used. We need to take homes of landlords who are not using them and leaving them in a poor state. And we need to introduce compulsory purchase orders. That's what a Labour council did in Hastings. When housing was becoming sort of derelict, the council put forward a compulsory purchase order to be able to take that house back and put it out for rent for people. But only, you can only do these things if you're in power, and it's going to be us or the Tories, and we will deal with the housing crisis.
Okay, well, I'm going to turn now to UKIP. What would be your view on this particular issue?
If anybody cares to check on YouTube, you will see me asking Nigel Farage a question in 2012 on the crisis in social housing nationally, but more acutely down here. I asked, what was the UKIP policy towards solving this problem? It was a very simple answer: build council houses. Not social housing, council housing. Because there's all the difference in the world, and I'm afraid, Caroline, you have missed the elephant in the room on that one. Everything now is social housing, and now social housing can be sold off. Social housing has to make a profit. Would you not agree with me? There is. Thank you. Good. Now, that is the thing.
That's why we're committed to building lots of council housing.
Sorry?
That's why the Greens are committed to building lots of council
housing. You actually said social housing, as I recall, but nevertheless, there is a difference. And I think folk in Brighton, born and bred like myself, know that. Now, both Solomon, with respect, and Caroline have said, oh, right, you know, we need to bring in rent controls. Now, I have a rather strange life story. I used to be a landlord. I had over 50 different places I used to rent. I lost a lot in the recession many years ago. We have recessions at approximately every 8 to 10 years. I now find myself in private rented accommodation, and I'm struggling to pay the rent. So I know plenty about this now. I can fully see where both of you are coming from. Right, let's bring in rent controls. I'm old enough to remember when rent controls first came in, and you know the result of that? All the people who were renting houses and tenants had no security in those days. As many as possibly could panicked and sold their houses. Now, this, if you were to say this, it would be wonderful to think that you could. Let me put that on record. But if you were to advocate this now, the landlords would simply sell, and there are plenty of people prepared to flock into this city. Another thing we need to do is look at what they've done down in St. Ives in Cornwall. Is anybody here familiar with what's happened there? I believe it's called a local development plan, whereby they have stated that houses or new builds will be sold only to people who are indigenous to that area of the country. The government, of course, is telling it under their so-called localism act. I'm not going to go on and on, but that gives you some ideas of what we want to do. But something has to be done, and I'm sorry to the university, but more needs to be done to provide accommodation for students. This has caused a crisis in places like Moscow and Bevendy, plenty more. That's it.
To the big issue in this election, which I think is very clear to all. So I'm now going to turn to our next question, which comes from Sam Stoddard. Is Sam? Where's Sam? Right, can you get a microphone to Sam?
Thanks, and thank you all for coming. It's nice to actually bother to turn up unlike one of the parties. So my question was, what do you think the long-term aims of the Brexit talks should be, and how do you think these targets can be achieved?
Okay, well, we all know that Brexit has to be the big issue in this election, so I'm going to turn this time to Solomon to give us a view first of all.
Well, thanks for the question. You know, Theresa May has said that this election is going to be about Brexit. I think it's going to be about a lot more, but that doesn't mean that Brexit isn't important. I'm someone who, just before I answer a question, I was someone, as did Ed Miliband when he was leader of the Labour Party, who said we should never have had this referendum on the EU. When the Greens were shouting that we should have an EU referendum, we said that we don't believe that referendums are a good form of democracy. We think it will be divisive, we think people will be misinformed, and I think we were right on that, and it should never have happened. But it has happened, and if you are a proper Democrat, then you do have to accept the result of the referendum. But that doesn't mean you have to accept Theresa May's approach to Brexit. So what we've said is that we want to try and get as much access to the single market as possible. We've guaranteed rights for EU citizens who are living in Britain. What we want to do is something which the other parties don't understand. We want to try and bring our country back together after the EU referendum, to try and understand why some people voted leave. And there were some reasons why people voted leave, but to try and show that we can be a successful country. At the end of the day, if we end up with a similar arrangement to Norway, things don't really change. It's just sad that we don't get any say, or actually in the EU. But actually, everything pretty much stays the same. And I've said that as the MP for Brighton Pavilion, someone who proudly believes in parliamentary democracy, not referendum democracy, that as the MP, if the majority of voters in Brighton don't like the deal that comes back, then as the representative of Brighton Pavilion, I will vote against it. But if people in Brighton are happy with the deal that we go with, which I think most people probably would accept if it was a Norway agreement, then, you know, if that's the case, then I will vote for it. But I think that's what's important. We need MPs who represent the constituency on big issues like this. Let's not have misinformed referendums with £350 million for the NHS increase.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, Lesson, I might push you a little bit more. You've talked a bit about the process and the importance of the local vote when it comes to the deal. But what would you as Labour like to see that deal securing? You've talked a bit about the Norway type arrangement, but what else should the deal have within it? Yeah.
Well, we'd like to see access to the single market. We wouldn't like to see tariffs. We would like to see the protection of EU citizens' rights in the UK, the protection of UK citizens' rights across Europe. And we'd also like to protect something that people often forget about the European Union, which is the enormous progress that they made on workers' rights, which is what the Labour Party was set up to actually call for. So protecting workers' rights, and the EU Environmental Acts as well.
Good, so I'm now going to turn to my left here. UKIP, as you said in your opening statement, was the party that got Brexit, as you put it. So what would you like to see in the deal, and how do you think those aims can best be achieved?
What I would like to see in the deal is exactly what was said on the tin. And sorry, Solomon, but shame on you for saying that people were confused. How confused can you be? There was a simple question on everybody's ballot paper. Do you wish to remain a member of the European Union, or do you wish to leave?
So will it be getting 350 million?
Perhaps you care to ask Messrs. Gove and Johnson, because it was not UKIP, and you know perfectly well who said that.
Yeah,
that
it was UKIP, you stood in front of the camera, and you saw the poster, and scapegoated.
Don't change the subject. If I may continue, the point was, that was Vote Leave. We had our own organisation. Yes, we went along, everybody got together, Vote Leave, all the rest of them. Now, you say you don't believe in referendum. Can I ask you, Solomon, can I ask everybody here, do you think Switzerland is a well-run country?
No.
No? Can I ask why not?
Tangible workers' rights, poor, like not very strong unions, exploitative banking models, terribly low corporation tax is...
Okay. But they also have referendums. Now, what can possibly be wrong with the referendum? You see, the reason, now if I may say, the reason that UKIP obtained 4 million votes at the last general election and ended up with only one seat, but that now, of course, is subject to judicial matters, I'm delighted to say today. The reason for that was because it is the elitist attitude that has prevailed since the dawn of globalization. There's nothing wrong with thinking globally. There's everything wrong with dictating globally. People, we've only to look across in the West, where Donald Trump won the American election, because people felt left out, because people felt talked down to. Now, this seat of learning, frankly, is the kind of place I would expect to hear people not take elitist views, to hear people listen to what everybody who isn't in this building is saying. Because if you don't listen, it's done at your peril.
Just a final point,
what can we do to bring about the Brexit? Get us out of there as ASAP. How much money have we wasted since we had the referendum and no divorce bill? They owe us money.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask you also to be a bit more specific. So you've talked about the referendum and about the vote, but now what would you, as UKIP, like to see the aim? We're now in Brexit talks. What would you like to see as their aims, and how do you think those targets might be achieved? So to answer the question here.
I would like to see us continue trading on the best possible terms. We do not have to be a part, and by the way, we do not solemnly advocate the Norway model, not at all. We advocate the standalone British model. We advocate trade, and that's fine. I can't understand why anybody would laugh about having any pride in their country who invented the Industrial Revolution and so many other good things that somebody would find that an amusing matter. I don't find that amusing. Now, the fact is, what we want to do is to stand up to the bullies, the unelected bureaucrats, and I can't imagine, this is an exercise in democracy, I cannot imagine why Caroline, no disrespect at all, but you are such a fanatic in favour of the EU. And yet, I see you prop up on television on a regular basis, banging on about self-determination for the Palestinians. Your Green Party banging on, yes, your separate Green Party.
I don't see the distinction.
A Nationalist Party. No, you'll have your say in a second. Let me have an answer. The fact is, Caroline, what's wrong with Britain having self-determination? Could you answer me that, please, or could anybody else?
Okay, well, Karen, opportunity not just to answer Nigel, but also to give us your view. We are where we are. What would the Green Party like to see as the outcome of these talks?
Well, Sam's question was, what we want to see as the outcome, and I guess my answer to that would be just to reduce the extraordinary damage which this likely outcome is likely to bring about, sadly. I think the kind of extreme Brexit that Theresa May is pursuing is not one that she has a mandate for. It wasn't on the ballot paper. Out of the single market, out of the customs union, losing key social and environmental protections, that was not on the ballot paper. And yes, I did vote in favour of having a referendum, but not the kind that we had. If you compare this referendum with the one that they had in Scotland, for example, where, for example, the SNP and the people in favour of independence there actually had a manifesto to tell you what independence would look like. The Leave campaign deliberately didn't put forward any single idea of what Leave would look like because they wanted to play with so many different options so that you didn't know what you were finally voting for. You knew that you were leaving the EU, but you didn't know where you were going. And that's why I think it's right that the people in the country have a right to look at the fine print of whatever deal comes back from Brussels. And if you like it, then by all means sign up to it and that's great. But if you don't, then I think you should have the right to remain inside the EU. Now, you had Solomon saying just now that he's going to vote in line with what the people of Brighton want. Well, that's very nice, but I have no idea how he's going to know that unless he's got a crystal ball, because he's not in favour of that ratification referendum. I think it should go back to the people. It was the British people that set off this whole process to leave the EU. It should be the British people that look at the fine print in 18 months' time and decide if they like it. And you know what? I have lots of concerns that there's going to be plenty that we don't like. Not only because this is a massive act of economic self-harm. Solomon talks about access to the single market. Anybody can have access to the single market. The issue is being a member of the single market. That's the difference when it comes to the non-tariff barriers as well as the tariff barriers. When you think about what might be happening to Ireland with a potential hard border there between the North and the Republic of Ireland, that I think is a reckless gamble to take. Personally, I also want to stand up for what I think is an amazing gift, the amazing gift of freedom of movement. And I'm so sad that Labour has sold out to you, to young people, on the gift of free movement. What an amazing gift it is to be able to work and to study and to travel and to work and to live and to love in 27 other member studies. Listen, I didn't interrupt you, so you don't interrupt me. So, being able to do that, I think it's a fantastic gift. We should be standing up for that amazing right, not selling it down the river. And I just feel so sad that Labour did not put any conditions on their agreement for the Article 50 triggering. We could have linked that to, for example, the right of EU nationals to stay here right now. In fact, if Labour had wanted to, they could have made a coalition with the Lib Dems, and the Greens, and the Nationalists, not a coalition, but an agreement, to go for a form of Brexit that kept membership of the single market and that kept free movement and, crucially, that kept the environmental protections, which also we're very worried that we're going to see go, because the environmental protections are massively coming from Brussels. The government talks simply about cutting and pasting that legislation into UK law, but they've got no idea how they would actually make that enforceable. When you don't have the European Commission, when you don't have the European Court of Justice, you don't have the legal mechanisms to make sure that our seas are clean, that our beaches are clean, that our air is clean. It's only because of the threat of fines from the EU that has meant that our government finally has begun to respond to the air pollution crisis in places like London. So my answer, in summary, would be to give you the right to have a say on that final deal. That, I think, is the best way to make sure we get the best outcome from these Brexit discussions.
Responses to Caroline, particularly from UKIP, what would you like to say on this crucial issue about free movement and of workers and people, and also on the environmental protections? Because you didn't say anything about that in your
opening. I'm about to now, Chair. Thank you very much.
Briefly.
You have so little faith, Caroline. I can't imagine why you became the carpetbagger from Brussels and stood for Parliament here. No, forgive me, please. When you talk Parliament down, you say we have no power. We couldn't have done anything without the European Union. I'm aware that you're
someone.
I'm aware that you're somewhat younger than me. Obviously, too young to remember how we got all those trade union on workers' rights and a health service and care. Yes, that work in many respects is absolutely right. At least you're being honest, Solomon, and thank you for that. We did it. I was involved in trade union. I could have been put in the Tower of London for leading the customs and excise out on strike and helping to bring down the appalling Ted Heath government. But you don't remember that, do you, Caroline?
I think my recollection is rather different from yours about many things, Nigel.
Clearly it is. You wear green coloured.
Okay, can we hold this? This is not
not a personal discussion about people's
well,
history.
Well, then it's been made,
I think we shouldn't have too much ageism going on here, but I managed to turn
to maybe
we could talk about that. I'd like to hear what Labour feels about free movement and environment,
well,
and also you can respond to, I think, what Caroline has said about the Labour position on Brexit altogether.
Yeah, before I do, I just want to say that one of the things which I'm proud of my leader, Jeremy Corbyn, for is that he doesn't believe in abuse in politics. And although Caroline and I agree and disagree on a lot of things, I think it's important that women aren't talked down on, to on a panel, and that we have respect for each other, including respect for Nigel's viewpoint as well. But coming on to sorry, what's your question?
Could you respond to both what Caroline has said about Labour's overall position,
yep,
but also free movement and environment,
yep,
to specific aspects?
Okay, yes. So in terms of free movement, Jeremy Corbyn has said that he isn't going to make it a 100% sort of requirement that free movement continues. He sees the great benefit to free movement. I think it's a fantastic thing, particularly in terms of students being able to travel, but he has said that if the deal or if the negotiations mean that it's not something we can keep, then he will look at putting together.
I'll come back in a minute.
Okay. That's my train of thought there. Free movement that is not going to be a deal breaker. Free movement, but what he has said is that we want an open, inclusive style of politics when it comes to our immigration policy. Because at the end of the day, it's, as someone here sitting as the son of immigrants, trust me when I know the benefits that migration brings, and trust me when I say that Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party understands that. And the other question, well, the other point which I was going to make actually, is that Caroline has criticised sort of Labour around Brexit, but actually, if you look at the number of and for not sort of signing up for the Lib Dems and Greens. But 69% of Lib Dem voters, now the Lib Dems are probably the most pro-EU party, so one thing they'd be very confident on, 69% of their voters voted Brexit, 68% of Labour voters voted Brexit. And for people to suggest that Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party doesn't put our heart into the Remain campaign is ridiculous. But what we do believe is that countries should come together, that we shouldn't have endless referendums where we see divisions and abuse between people on other sides of the spectrum. And the other thing, the last thing I would say, because Caroline mentioned how will I know what people in Brighton think. For me, as somebody who believes in parliamentary democracy, it is an MP's job to know what their constituents think. And that's why, if they don't know what they think, and if they misrepresent them, that's why you vote them out. And we'd like to look at ways that you can vote them out even earlier than the next general election. But I think, rather than some MPs who like to spend their time talking on TV rather than talking to constituents, we should know what our constituents think. And you can sense the mood of your constituency. As we speak to people across Brighton, we sense the mood that people are enthused by a radical Labour Party and that they are going to move over this time.
Okay, final word to Caroline on this particular Brexit topic.
Well, the key thing is about the Labour Party is that they didn't try to see whether or not we could have got an agreement that would have involved keeping single market and keeping freedom of movement. And so, citing the fact that Jeremy likes freedom of movement or Solomon likes freedom of movement is really by the by. They didn't make the effort. And quite honestly, to hear the idea that Labour was 100% behind the Remain campaign, when I was throwing myself into that Remain campaign and Labour was frankly, sadly, conspicuous by its absence, that I think is a bit of rewriting of history as well. So moving forward, I hope that people will accept that it is right that the British people are the ones who should look at the small print of this deal again. I can't see why anyone would be against that idea. Why are we afraid of trusting the British people? I think that people, they didn't vote on the detail of the deal. They didn't vote on the detail of the deal because we don't know what the detail of the deal is. I sat on platforms with people like Dan Hannan from the Conservative Party, who absolutely said, of course we can stay part of the single market post-Brexit. No one's suggesting we come out of the single market. That would be madness. He actually said that while I was standing and sitting next to him. I know enough from people, talking to people in Brighton and elsewhere, that they were concerned about this £350 million that might be coming to the NHS. They were concerned about thinking that somehow, Brexit was ruining us. When they've actually looked at the details in more time and more information, many people are changing their minds. We should have a right to be able to change our minds on an issue that is so important for generations to come.
Right, thank you. Okay, well, we might have an opportunity to come back to some
some of this in open questions, but I'm going to move now to our third submitted question, which comes from Yeang Su. Whereabouts are you, Yeang?
Thank you for coming and joining us. I'm dressing in blue, but because I'm not from this country, so I guess I'm accused. I'm a doctoral researcher from the School of Global Studies. I'm asking a question that is, I have been thinking for a rather long time, and I'd like to ask the panel. So how can academics better work with the city and local communities to help resolve real-world issues? Thank you.
Well, I think that's a great question, which very much brings the role of a university that is located within and contributes to a community really into the heart of this debate, and it's the local and the global. So let's start this time with Nigel.
Thank you for that excellent question. I think that the brains we have in this establishment know that they're over Brighton University. We need to be, as I touched on earlier on, finding more ways of employing those brains in this city. I can think lots of things, such as the energy crisis, and I think we'd all agree we do have an energy crisis. We've got an ocean out there, well, a sea, right on our doorstep. I've long been interested, now I'm no engineer, but presumably there are plenty of people here that are. How do we harness the huge energy, or latent energy, and those waves coming in and out, crashing about every day? We've got the wind farm on the horizon. The wind farm partially might help things, but it only works when the wind is at the right speed. If you haven't got sufficient wind, you've got no power. If you've got too much wind, you've got no power. Now, lots of things, transport issues. I think you'd all agree, everybody here, to get out to this place takes quite some time on the 25 bus. The train's not too bad. But what we've been promised for the past 30 years, a rapid transit system. We've been promised a monorail along the seafront. Some have even suggested we certainly advocate a limited underground railway system. We have the brains here. We can have ideas as politicians, but I don't know, Solomon or Caroline are engineers who know the actual way of putting those cogs into place. But I would like to see the university collaborating with the local council on issues such as that.
Okay, I'm now
going to
turn to Caroline, I think, for this next one.
Thanks very much. Well, I think it's an excellent question, and with two amazing universities in the city, we are uniquely blessed, really, with people who are already making some of those connections that we've been talking about. And so I know that, for example, the University of Brighton has a very strong relationship with Ricardo, which is a company which is absolutely on the cutting edge of green technologies when it comes to transport in particular. I know here we're very blessed with having the Trade Observatory, which is looking at the impact of Brexit in terms of what kind of trade deals would best serve the interests of this country. We've got SPRU, a wonderful green hub here, that is also making links with sort of smart urbanisation. In other words, how do we make our cities much more livable cities? How do we make them inclusive cities? How do we involve older people in our cities and make sure that they don't feel isolated? I think there are huge potentials here to exploit further. And if I could just name one of the ones that I'm passionate about. We might get later on in the discussion about drugs policy, but one of the issues that troubles me about the city is the number of people with substance addictions, and in turn also the number of needles that you find in parks, in stairwells, and so forth. And this is a real risk to everybody, frankly. Now, one of the policies that the Green Party was looking at was around the whole issue of drug consumption rooms. Would that be a good thing or a bad thing? We want to look at the evidence. We're not saying it's absolutely the right thing. But this could be a way, for example, of people being able to use those needles in a safe space. It could be a way of having medical people on hand when trust is built up to then to be able to get them into further support and hopefully rehabilitation. It will be a way, certainly, of getting those needles off the public places. So having an issue like that, and some of the social research that could go behind that would be really, really interesting. What are the pros, what are the cons? I would love to see kind of links on that.
There are lots more links as well that I know are already being made on issues like poverty and the best ways to address growing poverty and inequality. And again, I think there's a real potential here of being able to learn from other countries too, how best practices worked elsewhere, because I think there's lots that we could learn from other countries too. So those would be my first ones to kick off with.
Well, I think Sussex is a good example of a university that is working with the community. You know, we've seen that Sussex is a fantastic research university. We need to make sure that people like yourself, Yang, can go on and be the leaders of our future global issues. And the big global issue that I think none of the parties are talking about, and I include my party in this, but something which I want to take to the front of my party as your MP, is to look at the issues around automation and around globalisation, how it's not feeding down, because actually that's a huge challenge that we're going to be facing. The fact that people's jobs are about to be replaced by modern technology. We must recognise that there are great benefits of new technology, but we have to look at how we can retrain people, how we can have a holistic education system which takes away traditional subjects and makes sure that our students are prepared for modern day jobs in social media and new technology. So actually not continuing with this sort of industrial revolution-based education system, but following the example of areas like Finland, which puts well-being at the core of education and life skills at the core of education. We need to think globally in order to solve global issues. I'm incredibly disappointed that Donald Trump has pulled away from the climate agreement, because he said that he was putting America first, and it seems he's putting the planet second. To be able to pull out of big global initiatives where 196 countries are coming together to look at what is probably the single biggest issue facing our planet, is definitely the planet's biggest issue, about whether it continues to survive. And I think what we need to do is to make sure people have access to university. And how do we do that? We make sure that we no longer have £9,000 tuition fees, that we end tuition fees, that we look beyond tuition fees, we think about living costs and how we're going to make sure that people can afford to live by actually raising student grants and getting rid of student loans. And we have to look at how we inspire people from deprived communities to realise their full potential. And actually, as someone who grew up in the second most deprived seaside town in Sussex, and then, you know, standing here today, standing to be your MP, I'm very aware that it was because of a Labour government that gave me the opportunity to come to university, that it wouldn't be possible without a Labour government taking 500,000 children out of poverty, investing in our schools, investing in our education, in our future. And that is exactly what Jeremy Corbyn is going to do when he's elected Prime Minister on June 9th.
On either picking up on issues that we've covered or raising those that we haven't. So I'm going to open it up now to the floor. So if you could raise your hands, and again, we'll ask each candidate to respond briefly and keep it quite brief, and hopefully we can fit in a range of questions. So first of all, the woman here in the third row.
We are part of the Progressive Alliance.
Yeah, you agree with the Progressive Alliance.
Okay. So, I mean, what the Greens have been talking about in particular are electoral alliances, plural, in a number of marginal constituencies with a view to partly stopping a Tory landslide, but also, crucially, electing MPs who will go back to Westminster and fight for a fairer voting system. Right now, we have an archaic electoral system which gives power in this last government on the basis of just 24% of the eligible vote. That is absolutely scandalous. So we need to change the system so that everyone's voice and their vote is heard equally. Because right now, in the South East, 93% of your MPs are Tory, whereas only 50% were actually people of 50% people voted for it. So there is a massive discrepancy there. So that is the goal. And that is why, for example, the Greens stood down in Brighton Kemp Town. They took a really brave decision, I think, to stand down in Brighton Kemp Town to give a better chance to Labour to be able to try to win that seat. And I hope they do. And because we have had a conversation with the candidate there, and he has said very clearly that he will fight for electoral reform if he is elected. Now, I don't like having to play with the electoral system in this way. I don't like having to spend our time talking about tactical voting. But it seems to me that if we're not to wake up on June the 9th and bang our heads in absolute despair at seeing the Tories get in again, then we are going to have to think a bit more imaginatively about this electoral system. Because sadly, I don't imagine that the polls are going to be as positive as they might look right now. I hope they are, but I fear they're not going to be. And I do feel we're going to wake up on June the 9th with a Tory government again. And I just hope we can be a bit savvier and we can work a way that everyone's voice and everyone's vote is heard. It is scandalous that that's not the case now. That should just be a basic quality of democracy. So I'm hoping that, I was disappointed that there weren't more reciprocity around the actions that the Greens took, because we've stood down in a number of seats. The Liberal Democrats, to their credit, and thank you for that, did stand down in Brighton Pavilion. But what we would have hoped would have been to see a little bit more of that reciprocity, so we can break through this system once and for all, so we don't ever again have to spend our time thinking about how to vote tactically, which is incredibly disempowering and frustrating, rather than really being able to vote for what you believe in.
So what's your view and what's Labour's view on the question of progressive alliances and tactical voting, which goes
into Thank you for the question. I'm someone who has spent the last few years working with the Labour Party at a senior level to see how we can actually make sure that we are looking at ways that we can work with parties. And something which I've always called for is actually saying that in seats like Lewis and Eastbourne, where we know it's a Tory or Lib Dem, then we should look at not necessarily not standing a candidate, but not running a sort of large campaign so that we can actually allow the Lib Dems to beat the Tories. But the Greens are completely delusional on this, because the problem is that they do not understand Labour voters at all. The idea that Labour voters will vote Green or Lib Dem if you don't give them a Labour candidate is ridiculous. If you go out and speak to Labour voters in Coldean, in our working class communities, they will vote Tory if they don't have a Labour candidate. And you know, people have said to us, why have we not stood down here? Well, first of all, because we had no request from the Greens to stand down here. Second of all, because I think we'd actually be at risk of having a Tory winning pavilion if we're here. Because I'm out speaking to our Labour voters, trying to persuade them not to vote for Theresa May's party. Every single day, when we leave this debate, I will be going out to Coldean around the corner and on the doorstep, speaking to Labour voters, begging them not to vote for Theresa May. Because one in three of our voters voted Brexit. Do you really think they're going to vote for the Greens or the Lib Dems who are calling for a second referendum? It is completely delusional. What it is it's about soliciting power for smaller parties to be able to grow. I don't have a problem with smaller parties growing, because I believe that we should have a more proportional representation system. You know, the actual misconception is that the vote on AV was a vote for first past the post. It wasn't a vote for first past the post. It was a vote against a confusing system. I actually think there's an overwhelming majority of people who would like to see a more proportional representative voting system. And I will support that as your MP. And trust me, I will have more influence in changing Labour's policy on that than any other party, if you want to see the Labour Party move in that direction. So I just think, let's get sense about this. The idea of reciprocity, as if elections are something where parties do favours to each other, is appalling in my view, because people can vote tactically with a choice. And people do vote tactically with a choice. And actually, I think the best value of progressive politics is democracy. Too many people around our world, they do not have a choice in democracy. What we saw in Manchester is that people are trying to attack our democracy. Isn't it wonderful that we can give people a real choice around the country, even here in Pavilion? We know the Tories can't win here. So we can have a proper progressive debate between the Labour Party and the Green Party, and I think let's respect that.
UKIP, Progressive Party indeed, what's your position on very different sides of the political spectrum? What's your view on the Progressive Alliance issue?
not such a small party. We are still the third party of those 4 million votes, bigger than the Lib Dems in the last general election, so let's talk facts. Now, I completely agree with what Solomon has just said, and it's a pleasure to be able to say that. I, like Solomon, I presume, don't like to see dirty little deals, grubby little deals between politicians. Yes, smile all you want, Caroline, behind those doors.
You've been doing it with the Conservatives. You are doing it with the Conservatives. There's a regressive alliance going on here.
Excuse me. How dare you, Caroline, because I don't want to see the Tories win any more than you or Solomon. Sorry about this. Yeah, well, it's me being attacked and the right to defend myself. The fact is this. The Tories won the last election. I didn't like it any more than the fact that you won the last election, Brian Pavilion, but people didn't call for a second vote on the issue, Caroline. The electorate are the ones who decide. We believe, and have for many years, in proportional representation. The system is you. There I would agree with you, Caroline, but I do not agree with doing dirty deals. My party is doing no such thing. Excuse me, Caroline. Caroline, you don't speak for UKIP, thank goodness.
Well, that's true. That is it.
We'll leave that one there. Move to another question. So, the lady in the second row here.
So the panel have already picked up on this slightly, but I wanted to get their views on the UK's response to the US pulling out the climate deal and the not joining in with the statement that Italy and France and Germany have produced today, and also more broadly, thinking about the panel's views on the UK's role on dealing with some of those big international issues such as climate change, particularly as we move to leave the European Union.
Great. Well, I'll go to Caroline first on this, because obviously the Green Party has been well outspoken on the question of climate change. But
thank you very much. And we've also been desperately trying to make it part of this election campaign. And it is a shame that it takes Trump to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, to even get the other politicians talking about the environment and climate change, because it's been nowhere so far in this election campaign. So in terms of our response to what he's done, I mean, I think it's an act of extraordinary environmental vandalism, but it's also an act of economic self-harm, because we know that actually a shift towards a greener economy is in the interests of business and of a better, safer, more prosperous economy than relying on fossil fuels. And I think it's really interesting, in the States itself, you've got businesses and cities and some of the states, the individual states, who are basically, you know, thumbing their nose at Trump and saying, well, we're going to go ahead with our plans to get 80% cuts in CO2 emissions by 2050, 100% renewables over the next few decades. They're going to go ahead with that because the economic logic is already there behind it. So I don't think he's going to do as much damage as he thinks he is, because I think the logic of the investment in the greener economy is already there, the economic logic is there. But where I do feel desperate is that our Prime Minister, this famous Prime Minister who's supposed to be strong and stable, can't even say boo to a goose. She won't even stand up to Trump. And the fact that she would not join the letter that was sent from France and Italy and Germany, and instead just comes out with this sort of platitude that, well, it wasn't a bit disappointing. You know, disappointing is a vastly unsuitable word here. It was absolutely catastrophic in terms of what's happening. And the first thing is, essentially not stand up for us, I think, really, really does put into question these qualities of leadership that she prides herself on and which she seems to be incapable of actually using whenever there's an occasion so to do. So here at the UK, what I hope we can do is to make sure that, as you'll hear from the other candidates, I'm sure that they're all concerned about the environment too, but what we need now is action, not just words. Because even if all the countries did as they pledged to do in Paris, even if the US stayed in there too, we would still be on course for 3 degrees warming, not 2, and certainly not 1.5. So far, those kinds of pledges are still not enough, even if they were put into practice. So, as well as having nice words, what we want to have to see is some dramatic action. That means things like not investing in nuclear power, which is a massive and costly distraction from renewable energy and energy efficiency. It means not building lots more roads and airports. It means having a genuinely sustainable economy. We can do that. It's going to be good for us to do that. What we need is the political will to do that. And frankly, unless you've got Greens in Parliament, I fear that's not going to happen.
Well, I can't speak for Europe on Trump's decision yesterday because I haven't heard from head office what it is. I can speak for mine. Well done, Donald Trump. He did exactly what he said on the tin. What a refreshing change for democratically elected politicians to carry out their election pledges. And I personally have never bought into Caroline's great climate con. When I say climate con, but let me explain. Everything's on about man-made global warming, man-made climate change. Perhaps, Caroline, perhaps people here could enlighten us about the menace of carbon dioxide, of which every living and dead thing are composed. Carbon monoxide, I think, is the problem. Nitrous dioxide, I think, is the problem. Caroline's beloved European Union is threatening continually to sue Brighton Hove City Council because the air pollution rates have gone through the roof since the Green administration 4 years ago. Now, this is just cant and hypocrisy to say you care about the climate, you care about the planet. What killed the dinosaurs? Wake up, everybody. Climate change 68 million years ago. How long have we been on this planet? We really are to up ourselves as a species. I love the planet. I want to save the planet. But let's concentrate on things like the more noxious gases which are destroying every form of life, including ourselves.
Okay, well, I'm going to actually hand it to Solomon now to see if we have what views we have on this very polarised view of whether climate change matters or even whether it exists.
Well, to be fair, Duncan did actually say something right, which is that Donald Trump is actually delivering on his electoral promise, and I think that's incredibly sad that people voted for someone who doesn't believe that our planet is important. As someone who was brought up as an environmentalist, with my mum running the Brighton Peace and Environment Centre, this is absolutely at the core of what I think is important for our country. And what I'm proud of the Labour Party for doing is actually moving on from the Greens debate and not looking at climate change as an issue on its own. If you read the Labour Party manifesto, which I think is a great manifesto, if you haven't read it, have a look. Under every single chapter is a section on the environment. The environment, unlike the Greens, is not one issue. It's about looking at how we include sustainable living in every single aspect of our living and of our world, how we have a green economy, how we have a green education system, how we have green transport, how we have, you know, looking at every issue. And I would like to say that actually I agree with Caroline, it's about action, not words. And that's why we need a Labour government and as many Labour MPs elected to be able to deliver on Jeremy Corbyn's long-standing record protecting our environment. And if we want to compare records, then let's compare it, because under Labour, we saw the scrappage scheme, which helped to reduce emissions. We saw us signing up a legal requirement to reduce CO2 emissions, the first time we ever did that. We created the role of Energy and Climate Change Secretary, which was Ed Miliband. And actually, the Greens' record on environmentalism, when you look at how they ran Brighton Hove City Council, taking it from one of the councils with the best recycling rates to the worst, emission rising that we've seen that whilst the Greens were in office, then I do think it's about actual words. I completely agree, and I think we should judge parties on their record on the environment. And can I just say that we have said quite clearly we will end fracking, we will introduce a Clean Air Act, we will safeguard habitats and species in blue belts, which is the sea around us, that we will set targets on plastic bottle deposit schemes, that we will plant 1 million trees, that we will keep forests publicly owned, that we will stop, introduce a landlord energy saving allowance, that we will nationalise our energy grid, and that we will meet the Climate Change Act's target. And at the end of the day, it's going to be us in power or the Tories. It's going to be Jeremy Corbyn, who passionately believes in the environment, or Theresa May, who doesn't. and we need as many Labour MPs as possible to form that government. And trust me, you know, I absolutely commend Caroline's work on the environment because, you know, my family, who are environmentalists, have worked with them on environmental issues. I just want a Labour government and I want a Labour MP.
Okay.
I just want a bit more honesty in the debate, really, and we can discuss the Green Council if we want to, but the way in which it's being portrayed and the issues around the union problems that we inherited when we got there is part of a big debate which I'd be very happy to have later on. But right now, what we can say is, has Jeremy Corbyn done a big landmark speech yet on the environment? No, it has not been there as one of his priorities. When we look at the Labour Party manifesto, if you look at the fastest growing source of greenhouse gases, that's aviation emissions. Is the Labour Party brave enough to say no more airport expansion? No, it isn't. So when it comes to those big decisions, if we're serious about the kind of action we need to take to address the climate catastrophe fast enough, then I'm afraid you're not going to get it from Labour, which is why you need Greens in there, constantly raising this issue, constantly pushing it, because without us, it's not there.
Hi, yeah. I suppose my question really comes in two parts. The first part being an observation, then a question. The observation from having listened to what's going on today is that actually, Caroline, I'd say about 75% of your answers to questions have been dedicated towards attacking Labour today rather than attacking the Tories. Which indicates to me that actually you consider Labour to be your enemy rather than it being a progressive party, and you should be targeting the Tories rather than Labour. So obviously I can see you don't get most of your answers to that towards attacking the Labour manifesto and Labour policies today. The second part of it is a question actually for Solomon. With your background in peace and environment and your parental involvement there, and having been involved in the youth parliament since the age of 13, and having a politics degree and doing the rest of it, I kind of find it interesting that you didn't actually join the Green Party rather than joining Labour. And I wonder what your reasons for that are.
Okay, so let's have a quick response to each of those about the relationship between Green and Labour. So quickly, first to Caroline and then to Solomon.
Well, believe me, if the Conservative had actually shown up, I would be attacking them. I think anybody who saw me on the least against some minister. I came out there absolutely landing blow after blow on Amber Rudd, so I really don't take that piece of criticism very seriously. What I will say is, however, that I'm not going to attack the vast majority of the Labour manifesto, because the vast majority of the Labour manifesto is actually the Green Party manifesto from 2015, which has been cut and pasted and moved across. It's true. Bringing rail back into public ownership, that was one of my first private members' bills that I put in Parliament, wasn't supported by the bulk of the Labour Party. I have been there, the Green Party have been there, talking about scrapping tuition fees. It was the Labour Party who introduced tuition fees. You know, when it comes to the living wage of £10, that was a Green Party policy. See, look, I'm not going to criticise the vast majority of that Labour Party manifesto because it is the Green Party manifesto. So that's fine, and I've worked very closely with Jeremy in the past for it. But what I will do is identify those areas where I don't think it goes far enough, and that's surely my job, because if I agreed 100% with Solomon, I would be in his party, and I don't. So, one of the issues that I will focus on, and I think the biggest place that I've actually criticised Labour tonight, is on Brexit, because I feel really, really let down and disappointed that Labour didn't do more when it came to challenging the kind of extreme Brexit we've got. I feel let down that we don't have a commitment in that Labour Party manifesto to not spending £130 billion on Trident nuclear weapons. You know, I know what Jeremy feels about Trident nuclear weapons. He was the chair of parliamentary C&D when he became leader of the Labour Party. I took over as chair of parliamentary C&D. So we've worked very closely together on that. I'm very sorry he hasn't managed to bring the rest of the Labour Party with him. But do you know what? When it comes to the end of the day, you need to know that whoever is leading the Labour Party, that they are going to deliver the kind of policies in that manifesto. And the tragedy is that a good half of the current Labour Party MPs don't even support that manifesto. So if you want some kind of insurance policy to make sure that you're going to get the kind of progressive policies that you want, then frankly the best way to do it is to keep on making sure that there are strong green voices there, because that's what pushes the Labour Party to be more relevant.
Do
do you know what? It just upsets me because we've moved in a direction which I think, and I know that a lot of Green voters wanted to see the Labour Party move in. And I think that people are dying because of their benefits cuts. People can't get homes. Our schools are being cut. And to say, oh, it's just not that bit firm enough, and to try and attack us and then not even bother today to talk about Theresa May and the Tories, and then I think lets down those people. Because at the end of the day, it's not about people wanting a Labour government. I think this election is about people needing a Labour government. Because if we carry on, you know, we are talking about people's lives. That's what politics is about. We shouldn't just be talking in our own political bubble about this bill of the manifesto isn't here or this bill of the manifesto isn't there. It's about a bold vision for the country. And our vision is very different from the Tories' vision. And we should get support from people who have said that they wanted to see that sort of vision. And I think we will get support from that. And the idea that Labour MPs don't support the Labour manifesto is ridiculous, because all of the journalists have said that this is actually Ed Miliband's manifesto, if he'd been allowed to introduce it, and they were all very supportive of the manifesto last time. But the second part of the question is, why didn't I join the Green Party? And I have a lot of friends and a lot of family friends who are in the Green Party, and I have a lot of respect for them and what they want to achieve. And I agree a lot with some of the Green policies. Some of it, I think, regressively taxes the poorest, but we can go into that elsewhere. The reason why I'm not in it is because, for me, the people who inspire me to go into politics, people like Barack Obama, people like Clive Lewis, as a young black man in Sussex, I saw a party, the Green Party, which had the worst track record of BME candidates of any party in Europe. 4% of their MP candidates were black and minority ethnic. I brought it up time and time again, but we never get a response from the Greens on it, just saying we have more to do. And I think if we're going to inspire young, diverse people in politics, then we need young, diverse people in Parliament. And even UKIP got 8% of their parliamentary candidates as black and minority ethnic. So I have family friends who are active in the Greens, who stand for Parliament in the Greens. And I say to them, I wish you luck, but I can't be in that party. I want to be in the party that has changed our country every single time it's gone into government. I want to be in the party that introduced the NHS, introduced the minimum wage, put forward the Good Friday Agreement. And I want to be standing behind Jeremy Corbyn, our leader, who will transform our country in a way that we have never seen before.
Maximum of 2 minutes each. You can pick up on anything you feel is left unsaid from the previous questions. And maybe I think this audience might like to hear how your party is going to inspire the next generation. What is actually going to bring young people out to vote? And what have you got to offer for them? I think that would be something good to address in a closing 1 to 2 minutes. And again, we've had a drawn order for this. And it's Caroline first, then Solomon, and then Nigel, you get the last word. So 2 minutes, Caroline.
Well, thank you. I will pick up the suggestion you made, because I think engaging young people in politics is one of the greatest priorities, really. And that's why, for example, the Green Party would put our votes at 16, because we want young people's voices to be heard. And it's an interesting to look back at the referendum on the EU, and if young people's voices had been heard then we probably would have had a very different outcome from that referendum. So votes at 16 is key for us. We think that successive governments have let you down, whether that's on housing, whether it's on tuition fees, whether it's on the fact that in the future your rights to things like free movement are going to be severely cut. So we want to involve young people, and in the Green Party, young people have a very strong voice, they have a role on our executive, they are there in a very present way. But what I do want to pick up in these last moments, actually, is something that Solomon has said time and again, which is that if you want change, then you have to join the Labour Party, you have to vote for the Labour Party in order to get that. And I just simply want to say this, that I believe that Parliament is best when you have a diversity of voices, and that there is no security in knowing that Jeremy is going to be leading this Labour Party in the next 6 weeks, in the next 6 months. You don't know what's going to happen. I think what you need there is a consistent, unified party, which is absolutely 100% behind the policies it's putting forward, rather than a divided party. And it's clear that if it ever were a case that my vote was going to make the difference between a Tory government or a Labour government, then of course I would support a Labour government over a Tory government. But this idea that it's only Labour MPs that can deliver change, I think, is incredibly arrogant. I think the whole thinking around progressive alliances, which caught fire up and down the country, not in political parties, but from ordinary people as well, who were not necessarily members of political parties at all, was this idea that there's no one single party that has a monopoly on wisdom, that actually we can work together as a progressive left of centre grouping. And I think that, frankly, unless we do that, we are, under this electoral system, going to consign ourselves to more years of Tory rule, and I really would not wish that on the people of Brighton Pavilion, not least because of the very real cuts and the differences to people's lives that Tory government, that cruel and callous Tory government, is making.
Well, thanks very much for turning up, everybody. I think Parliament is at its best when it has a diverse range of voices. That's why I want to be a young, diverse MP in Parliament. Because I think one of the reasons that young people don't vote is because they didn't see anyone who looks remotely like them. Because when young candidates try and vote, other parties completely shout them down, tell them they don't have a right to stand here, and abuse them in the streets. If we actually want a progressive style of politics which welcomes people, then that's what we need to do. And what we've said, and what Caroline said about Votes of 16, that is going to be incredibly important. As someone who ran the Votes of 16 campaign, and we never actually got a response from the Green Party when I invited them to all of our events. As someone who ran it, as someone who negotiated with Alex Salmond to introduce it in Scotland, as the person who lobbied every single MP in Parliament who replied to our email to vote for it in the first reading, I'm absolutely passionate about getting young voices in Parliament. That's what has been my work. When people say, young, you know, he's only 20 years old, he's not experienced enough, I say, well, my experience has been trying to engage our younger generation in politics. My experience is the shared experience of young people across our country. My experience is saying that we can in tuition fees, that we can change our country, so that we actually make sure the next generation does as well, if not better, than the last. And I haven't said people have to vote Labour. I've said people need to vote positively for the party they believe in. If you believe in what this Labour Party is offering, then I ask you to vote for us. If you're worried about Jeremy Corbyn not carrying on as leader, then surely we need a Labour MP who will nominate him to be back on the ballot, as I will, as your MP. And actually, if you support what we're standing for, ending tuition fees, building 1 million homes, 500,000 council homes, changing our economy so that inequality is reduced, so that the shared benefits of globalisation reach working class communities as well as everybody else, then you can vote positively for us for the first time in a very long time. Your radical Labour Party is here, and we'd love your support.
Again, I have to find myself agreeing with Solomon. You've been reading our manifesto, haven't you? We do believe that what we have done, all the older generation, what have we left for the young generation? It's little wonder. So if many young people don't bother to vote, it's not apathy. I talk to young people all the time. It's that they simply cannot stand the kind of situation that we saw on the leaders' debate two nights ago, where you shouted, Caroline, and bullied everybody. All we could hear was your voice. And you know something? That turns people away in droves. Politicians aren't meant just to talk, they're meant to listen. What do we knock on doors for and canvas for? What do we come to places like this for? We want to hear views. Young people have a crisis when it comes to housing, when it comes to education. Our schools are beginning to fall down around their ears. We said several years ago we would largely, not totally, largely abolish tuition fees for the categories that I meant earlier on. And perhaps we can expand on that. By getting our own country back, by not having to pay money into subsidising the rest of the continent, there will be, as it occurred to anybody, more money to spend on things that matter. Restoring housing benefit to young people is equally essential, not only for young people's sakes, but for the parents' sakes. When people, we all remember, you get to a certain age when you've got very different musical tastes and very different views to your parents, and everybody needs a break from that. Trust in young people, and I'm speaking purely personally because UKIP have not mentioned anything about a policy of reducing the voting age to 16, but I trust the electorate. I personally would. Thank you very much for having us.
Okay, well, look, you've heard it. You've heard some very different views. views and some converging views on local housing crises, on the role of academics, on Brexit in its multiple dimensions, on climate change and environment, on the process of voting and alliance building, and on why young people, many of you in this audience, might vote for particular parties. It leaves me just to thank our panellists this evening, but also to remind you that we also have other candidates standing for Brighton Pavilion. This is the full list, so on June the 8th, next week, you have the opportunity to vote for UK Independence Party in Vernon Buchanan, for the Labour Party, Solomon Curtis, the Green Party, Caroline Lucas, the Conservative Party, Emma Warman, or an independent candidate, Nick Yeomans. And I'd just like you to join me in a big clap for our panellists, but also to encourage all of you who are in the Brighton Pavilion constituency and indeed who are eligible to vote in other constituencies to get out there, exert your rights as a citizen, and place your vote in what's going to be a really critical election. So thank you.
Unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.